Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. And, you know, we have young folks asking us to play D&D for the first time and not sure about what rules to use. So today, Wandering DMs, we're going to talk about the best way to pitch classic D&D in 2025 and hopefully hook them for life. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Hi, everyone. Before we begin the conversation today, I will remind you, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our After Party chat. That is a live video chat where you can talk to us and we'll talk to you on our Discord server. And it's available to all of our patrons and you can join in. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account all set up and ready to go before the show is over. And around maybe 10 or 15 minutes after the show, we'll be there to talk.
We have the very best patrons, Paul. For example, Backways, who's currently checking that we're currently live on Twitch, YouTube, and Restreambot. So thank you so much for that and other great support. Other news that I wanted to share, Paul, forgive me if it's too soon for this, but I did also want to tell our viewers that we are on the docket to go to GaryCon 18th, early next year, March 2026. Me and Paul will be at GaryCon, and we're planning on running some events there that are in the works. So if you are making plans, there are still badges and a couple, hotel rooms are filling up quickly. So we would love to see anybody live in person that was there at GaryCon, and we're going to be doing that in March. So I'm really excited about that, Paul.
Yeah, me too. I think we went there once before, all the way back in 2018, which feels like forever ago now, and I'm very excited to go back and see it again. Hopefully connect with some fans. Any of our fans are going to be there, we'd love to bump into you and say hi.
Definitely. Would love to see that. So the topic today is pitching classic D&D to brand new, probably young players in 2025. What brought this interesting topic today?
You know, it's interesting, right? We've had a few topics based around the fact that original edition D&D is now 50 plus years old. I don't know if we've tripped the clock over to 51 yet or not. I'm not sure. But anyway, the game's over 50 years old, right? And this actually just happened to me organically. There's a group of folks that we know locally, their younger generation, recently decided they're curious about D&D, interested in trying and checking it out. And my partner volunteered me. They were like, Paul runs D&D, and he's got a whole freaking podcast about it. Like, he should run some games for us. And so we just started having some very preliminary, very early discussions with a small group about, like, hey, maybe let's play some D&D. And the interesting thing for me coming out of this is their exposure is very, like, we're talking mostly people who have either never played or played a very small amount. And a lot of their awareness of D&D comes culturally. Right, either from they've watched some of the streams, maybe they've watched some Critical Role or some Dimension 20, or they're just aware in social media of the general zeitgeist around D&D playing. Right, is just kind of percolates now in geek culture that it's a thing that we like doing. Right, and so they're like, oh, I want to check that out. Right, I know it's very strange, I think, to us, for folks, Dan, like you and I, who are not used to like general interest in our hobby from the outside like this. Anyway, so I started having conversations with them about what to play. And of course, you know, their gut instinct, because what they're exposed to is like, I don't know, I guess 5th edition D&D, we should play that maybe.
Right.
And I want to like come back at them and give them like a positive, exciting pitch about like, maybe let's try something different. Maybe let's try original D&D.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I like that.
It's an unusual pitch though, right? Because I mean, you got to think, if you put your mindset in the where these folks are coming from, right? They're used to seeing 5th edition. That's what's all over the internet. It's new, right? It's shiny. It's available in the bookstore that they probably walked through.
Yeah.
Right? Why would they want to play this dusty old version from 50 years ago?
Now, I will say, so first of all, just I, of course, obviously support the idea of can we pitch it in the first place? And I'm someone who, you know, has the sensibility of DM as auteur. The majority of the lifting for the campaign is going to be, you know, performed by the DM. So I am certainly kind of on the side of the fence of, like, frankly, if the DM has the opinion, if they are accustomed to, experienced with, and more importantly of all, excited about a particular flavor of D&D, I'd frankly give that the majority vote right there. But I
totally
want
agree
the players
with that,
to be excited about it too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I think I've said many times. Like, the best system to play is the one the DM is excited to run, right? And especially if you're in this case of a lot of folks being new to it, so the DM is going to also have to take on a lot of teaching roles, right? The DM is going to have to, like, introduce each player's rules and whatnot. It should definitely be a system the DM is excited about, not one that they're just like, okay, well, this is what everyone wants, right? It's just going to be a better game if the energy is there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. So we already have some great chat that I want to throw out. And mm-hmm. I was also going to ask the question about, okay, we're talking classic D&D, which, you know, broadly means pre-Wizards, more or less, to us, like pre-2000. So my question was going to be specifically what flavor of classic D&D. So I'm certainly happy and pleased and proud that you mentioned original D&D out of the box, because that's certainly what I would want to do. Steve K in the chat, his very first question before he even said that was original D&D. I can't even get him to consider Beckme or BX type D&D that we, you know, played and learned and is immediately behind your shoulder there on the shelf there. And he had a follow-up where Steve said the race class thing is what kills it for most players, which I'm guessing Steve means the combined race as class that's in that particular edition. Mm-hmm. Steve can correct me if I'm not reading that right.
Yep. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, I was a BX player for a very long time, so there's certainly arguments for BX. And then there's also arguments for various retro clones, right? We could also talk about things like Labyrinth Lord or, all the names are skipping through my head.
I was thinking Osric or maybe Osric, Old School Essentials Osric, now, Osric. Or maybe Shadow Dark that are all really big.
Yep. All good choices, right? All good choices. And frankly, that's, you know, in the past, one of the things that's where I've hesitated in recommending the straight print of the older stuff was that it was horribly out of print, right? Again, that problem of, I can go down to my local bookstore and find 5e books, no problem, but what is this weird version that you want me to play that doesn't even exist anywhere and I can't buy? But that's not true anymore, right? Because we could easily point them at DriveThruRPG and say, here's the PDFs, just get them, right? And they're cheap.
Exactly.
If they even need them, which, of course, again, I would argue, you don't need them. You don't need those.
Also agreed. Yeah, my thoughts exactly. And I was saying, and we've gone through that period in the early 2000 where that stuff was not available, where it was out of print, and initially motivated a lot of the retro clones. Motivated some way of getting something in print that people could pick up to refer to as reference works. And at least, I could possibly swing back the other way someday, but I'm personally very happy that they have been widely available for about 10 years at this point. And I also agree with, that would be one of my main pitches would be, and specifically out of my experience in my current Star Frontiers campaign, is how about we play an edition where you don't need to do any studying in advance? I could say, you know what? How about an edition where you don't need to learn any rules whatsoever at advance? You're going to discover it in play. And that is something that you could absolutely do, was the expectation, frankly, of the earliest, you know, tabletop role-playing games. And, you know, in contrast, it wasn't too long ago, I think I saw somebody on YouTube saying, I've been playing 5th edition for a while, and now for the first time, I'm going to play a fighter. a fighter. And so I'm going to have to take all weekend long and study up on it. I'm going to the beach and I have my player's handbook and I plan to spend several days studying the core D&D fighter for several days to evaluate the different options and so forth. And so I kind of want to make a pitch of like, what if you don't need to learn anything whatsoever? It's just going to happen. And I feel like that's a strength right there.
It's, you know, I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. That's certainly, in some cases, for some people, that's fun, right? That's like, oh boy, I get to study all these rules, right? Like, that's enjoyable.
Yeah,
you're looking forward to it, and you're taking that away. I get that.
Yeah,
but that
absolutely.
Said, I will say, more often what I hear, especially from folks who've never played any role-playing game before, is that one of the reasons they shy away is, oh, it looks very complicated. There's a lot of rules.
Yes.
How would I get to know it? So that's certainly a selling point that I would lean into pretty early on. I think if I'm talking to this group and they're saying like, I see a lot of 5e online, I would say, yeah, but the older systems are much more rules light, right? Whereas the new systems are rules heavy, or in geek parlance, crunchy, right? I will often say the new rules are very crunchy. You're going to have to like really like learn a lot of minutia, whereas the older games tend to be, you know, lighter. There's just less rules to even bother to learn, even if you wanted to learn.
I think that's a major pitch there. And I feel like, and I've had sessions where everybody at the table was a brand new player, or maybe like one single person who played with me before. And, I feel like it's a pretty good start to say, hey, let's try at least one session where you're just discovering it on the fly and you are trusting what your character observes through me, the DM. And then if you get hooked, and if you're one of the people that really want to dig in and learn all the secrets of what's happening on my side of the screen, you can, the books are available. The old books are available there. You don't see them very much. You have to go find them, but you could, you can look up the secrets, kind of like the pitch to a magician library or something like that, for the people that do want to, become rules experts.
Yeah. That's funny. I think that,
not everybody wants that.
No, it's true. But that's part of, I think, part of the pitch, right? And part of the whole experience of what I'm going through here, right, is I'm talking to these people. I need to learn a little bit of their tastes and tell them a little bit of my tastes, and like we'll figure out what we want to do together. There's a little piece of me that says like, well, let's just get together for lunch and just like chat about gaming and not actually even play a thing. So granted, I know sometimes it's difficult to get inertia going for these things. Just getting all the bodies in the room at the same time is often the hardest part. So I do like the idea of like, let's just play a one shot. We'll get together, we'll play a one shot, and then we'll figure out what we want to do from there. I think is a great tactic. Yeah.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's very smart. Nice.
So yeah. We were talking about lighter and the rules. I think often then another conversational point or pitch point that I would give for old school stuff, is because I think it immediately flows from its rules light, is to get into the tone of the game, where I start to say it's rules light, which means that the games are faster. They're what are the words I like to use? Like, they're a little more fly by the seat of your pants, right? A little more freewheeling, right? They have this, you know, there's more antics and there's more space for silly drama, and you know, you don't get bogged down where you spend a whole entire 3-hour game playing one combat.
Right. Totally agreed. And the fact that you're going to be, I mean, this might start to be a little bit more arcane for people who've never played, but the fact that you're talking to other people, like at the table, more often than looking at your sheet. So a more complicated game, a lot of time you're looking at like, what ability do I have on my roster to use next? Whereas with older school games with much more minimal, character sheets, you have to talk with your teammates about what are we going to do together. And assuming that people are coming to D&D now in 2025 because they're looking for a live in-person way to connect to human people, I feel like that's part of the pitch right there, is it's frankly more human team oriented than it is staring at a bunch of more complicated statistics. which I feel is what probably people are looking for these days.
That's a good point, right? And part of this is to have that conversation, right? Like you should be learning about what it is they're looking for. Why do you want to play, right? That's actually probably a great place to start, is just asking them, what about D&D appeals to you? Why does it look interesting? That might kind of
the kids nowadays. I understand, Paul. You want to have these conversations and get in touch with people's feelings. As an old school DM, I'm like, I'm still learning. I get it. You know, another option, viewers, just to be perfectly clear, that the really old school style is you're gonna eat what's on your plate and you're gonna like it. You're gonna love it. You're gonna eat it all up. As long as you're playing under my house, you're gonna play with my house rules, and you're gonna love it.
Oh, geez.
I'm just putting options. I'm just putting options out there, DMs.
Yep. It is an option. All right, let me go back. I want to talk a little bit more about tone, because I think there's an interesting crossover here. So as we talk about, like, well, what is the tone of the game? And my gut tells me, and this is coming from the place of, like, I know that. In this particular case, and in a lot of cases, these players are coming from, I'm aware of D&D because of its presence in pop culture, in my social, I see it being posted about, I see memes about it in my social media, and that drove me to streams. And specifically, probably you're watching Critical Role, maybe some Dimension 20, right? There's lots and lots of other streams, of course, but those are the big ones that you're probably going to end up on pretty quickly. I would say, if you're comparing watching one of those shows to, like, the style of how I run games, those shows probably skew much more serious, right? And I don't know if that's, I almost wonder if I want to, like, do I want to go so far as to say 5e in general can skew towards more melodrama, more serious, like, and maybe not melodrama, but like just taking the world very seriously versus a kind of lighter, goofier, you know. You can't help, when you read the old school stuff, you can't help but find, like, they're just puns everywhere, right? Like, they weren't taking the narrative that emerged from the game that seriously.
True. And there's a lot of Tom Wom artwork, which is all, you know, kind of satirical about seeing player characters wind up in kind of ridiculous circumstances or fall on their butt or things like that. So it's shot through with a variety of certainly a variety of tones. You're right.
Yeah. And I feel like that's just less, it's not, I don't want to say it's not present. I've watched a lot of Critical Role myself, and certainly sometimes, and usually, frankly, more often player driven, right? The players will start to goof around and you'll get some, like, kind of silliness or whatever at the table, but then the DM will lean in. And it'll get very serious, and we start to talk about the world, right? And, like, you know, it gets very performative. And I get that, because that's what it is, right? This is a live stream that is performative, because you are trying to get viewers involved and whatnot. And I think that's, I just feel like streamed games tend to go that direction more, are more likely to go that direction, and possibly some of that has filtered its way into D&D. Now, maybe not in the rules, maybe not in the 5th edition rules, but probably what you're going to see in the material written for it, right? If you're looking at pre-written modules, adventures, whatnot, they're probably generally going to tend towards being a little more serious. Whereas if you look at the old original, you know, splat book modules that you and I have hoarded over the years, they're going to be maybe a little more, I don't know, a little more in the humorous direction.
They're absolutely throwing, you know, puns and anachronisms and jokes and, you know, throwing everything in the kitchen sink in, and certainly has a certainly wider variety of tones to it. You're totally right about that. Just out of curiosity, is the players that you're potentially talking to, I think have you already brought that up about, like, just like, tone that they're looking for? Are they looking for melodrama? Are they looking for something more humorous? Do you know that?
You know, very, very lightly. Okay, so I'm in the super early days of this communication with these folks. And largely, these are people that I don't really know super well, haven't talked to a ton, right? And they're like, basically trying to form a new social group to get together to do a thing, and why not play D&D? That sounds like fun. And one of the chief organizers has has played quote unquote one campaign before and said, oh, we probably want something maybe a little less serious, a little more goofy, you know, so probably not Strahd is what he said. And I was like, probably not. Well, I haven't read Curse, the latest, right? It's Curse of Strahd. Is that the 5e campaign that everybody seems to adore these days?
Rings a bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't read it myself, but I assume that is pretty rooted in the original Ravenloft, and I could totally, my brain kind of already think understands what he's getting at.
Right. It's interesting that, I mean, at least they're knowledgeable enough about that, yeah, if you're talking Ravenloft, you're definitely embracing the gothic horror desire.
Right. That's my guess, right? But again, like, so that's we've barely touched on tone. And again, like, this is I'm at this cross point now here where I'm like, do I want to like dig deep and say like, let's have a big conversation and talk a lot and dig through all the options or whatnot? Or do I want to encourage them to say, you know what, just show up, we'll just play a thing, we'll see if it grabs you or not.
Got it. So let me, okay, so just because we started with original D&D, and certainly that, if I could get anybody to play that, and they don't have a choice, so I do, I would be pitching original D&D, and among the ways that I would personally want to pitch that is that, yes, it's lightweight and it's brief. You know, assuming you have the supplement, you do have separate race and class choices. So there's some, you know, character choice available on that level, and you do dodge the BX basic set that entirely glued them together. So I think that that's an advantage. And for me, I would, you know, because I've had such a great time to clarify with this Star Frontiers campaign that I've been running for a year, the interesting accident about that was that the books aren't available. You cannot get the Star Frontiers, the classic Star Frontiers rules on DriveThruRPG to last I checked. And therefore, the players have had no resources, have had nothing whatsoever to read up or study or learn about. And so in addition to exploring the world, in addition to exploring the planet, they've also been exploring the rule space. And as we get into a new, they have like, here's an ability, how does it work? I'm like, I'm not going to tell you until you get in a fight, and then you're going to learn about it. So at each step, they've been learning and exploring and finding out what the resources do for them has been part and parcel of what they're exploring in the game. And I've had such a wonderful time with that if I had the opportunity, I would totally do that with original D&Ds. I would say, just come to the table. We're going to start playing, and you're going to be learning about the game on the fly. And, you know, I love your idea of like, let's run a one shot, because one of my questions was going to be, who's making the characters, frankly? And I always remember that in the original D&D book, it does explicitly say that the DM rolls the ability scores of the characters. So I might start, you know, embracing that off the fly. You know, maybe the very first thing is just come with a stack of pregens or something like that, or give them, I guess our better policy now is a very short, brief thing of like, here's a list of races, here's a list of classes, tell me which one you want. And I'm just, here's a very short sheet, and also a pitch that the DM is going to take over all the heavy lifting. I'm going to handle all the rules. I'm going to handle all the numbers. I could roll the dice for you if you want. You probably don't want that. But the game is small enough that I can remember everything about all the different character classes. So I, as DM, can handle all the heavy lifting for you, and you can just exist in the world as your character. And if you, as time goes on, if you want to learn more about it and want me to turn more of the mechanics over to you to handle on your sheet, we can do that. But part of it would be specifically exploring the rules, starting from tabula rasa, would be exactly a thing that I would want to do with original D&D, frankly.
I get where you're coming at from exploring the rules, but I wonder about the whole you don't get to create your own character part, because I do feel like that is a big part of the draw to even participate in the game. Yeah. Is I'm going to craft a character. And this is something that I was going to get at. Like one of the things I think that is a draw for 5e, especially for you know, whatever, one of the draws for 5e is that there's a lot of detail to the character. I have a lot of knobs to tune, right? Even at level one, right. I've got a lot of things that make my character special. And then as we continue to play and I gain experience, I get more and more and more things, more toys to play with that make my character cool and different and interesting. And I think that is playing a little bit on that, like, you know, that difference of personality of like, yes, I just want to like sit back and have a fun time and listen to the story and participate versus no, I want to understand the rules. I want to learn them. I want to start to manipulate them to my advantage.
I totally agree. And so the weak link, right, the weak link of my original D&D argument is absolutely that, is the possible character personalization. Again, I don't want to have to dig in like for a whole session, just character creation, I think would be a delay. So yeah, a weak link would be the relatively, particularly if you're playing at first level, the relatively small amount of personalization there. And combined with the fact that if you're playing classic D&D at first level, you have a really high body count. And you probably do have to tell the players, there can be a high body count here. You're very likely to lose your first character in the first hour. Do not get attached to them. And please do not write a big backstory beforehand, because you're likely to be bitterly disappointed. And that if I absolutely totally see players coming because I want to exist in this fantasy world. I want to add to it. I want to write a big semi melodramatic, tragic character backstory with family tree and everything like that. And if I take that off the table, that might very much be a barrier to what people may be looking for from D&D. So that absolutely is the weak link to that.
How would you handle that? Would you start at first level, I guess, if you were doing this, Dan? Or would you bump them forward a couple levels?
Well, that's what I was going
to ask. Give them a little more survivability and a little more toys to play with.
I'm torn, you know, and I was going to ask you the same question and also to our viewers. We know that Gary was starting people at third level, at least in convention games, out of the box to address exactly those kinds of things. I'm torn. You know, I would have to get to that day. For me, with my original edition Delta rules, where, you know, the fighters get a feat of their choice to distinguish them at fourth level when they get to hero level, I might lean towards maybe start off at you want to play a hero, so we'll just start at the hero level. Fourth level, your wizards have about five spells or something like that. But then that's already, they have to read the list of the feats to make a reasonable decision. Unless I give them pre-gens, I guess. So I'm really torn about that. And I do feel like people should probably experience what it was like to play original D&D at first level and how absolutely brutal it was. So I maybe one session, one single scenario with pre-generated characters at first level. Maybe that's not bad, just to say that I've done that.
I would worry that would. It would be a very swingy experience, right? And that some players would love it, and some players would just be utterly turned off by it. I would be tempted, you know, something I've done at a convention game in the past is, you know, there's always this going back and forth on this topic a million times of like, can you have character creation in convention play, right? It's just really hard because the time slot is so short. But here we're not talking about convention, right? It's not necessarily constrained to just one 4-hour session, right? We might have a little bit more time, a little bit more be in a little more relaxed environment. One thing I've played with in the past is you can roll up your stats and pick your race and class, and then I have pre-printed kind of like loadouts, if you will, that are just equipment, spell choices.
Right.
If we start at like second or third level, maybe I've tossed in one magic item, and then they'll just have a title up there of like, okay, you're playing a fighter. Do you want to play like, you know, heavy armored melee fighter, or do you want to play like light and nimble ranged fighter, right? And here are your two loadout options. And that's kind of nice. And then you just take the card and like fill out the rest of the character sheet with what it provided, not sit there agonizing over what equipment to buy and what spells to make.
I wanted to toss another
option. Did you want to go before I totally change topic?
I'm interested in the other option. I was going to ask about what other options are there, Paul.
Oh, right. So, another thought that crossed my mind was to just go completely sideways and play a totally different game. And my immediate gut reaction was, what about the Quest RPG, Dan? So I've bought this book. Right. I've not played it a lot. I know that you've played a couple campaigns of Quest. It's specifically, you know, written to be very friendly to new players, right? It's very rules light, like even more rules light, I think, than
yes,
than classic D&D, right? There's no stats to roll.
It is.
Right? There's, you get a little, like, a little, sort of, what did you call it? Like a Mad Libs-esque character sheet to fill in.
Yep.
That talks about where you're, you know, here you go, right? It's a little, hello, my name is, right. I'm the party's blank. When people see me, they first notice my blank. I wear blank. I'm from blank. Yeah. And then, but the, so the interesting thing about this game to me, right? Not only much simpler, right? There's no math, right? There's dice rolling, but there's no math.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but then the character choices, you have six, you know, eight roles to choose from. And each role has several complex ability trees. You gotta learn the abilities right in order. And you start with the first one and move down. Which I think leads to like a lot of customization. Right? These characters, these that you're creating, even though the whole rule set is very simple, you still get that like lots of knobs to tune as you go up in level.
Right.
That's right. My gut reaction from just reading it. I have not played the thing. I'm curious what your experience has been.
Yeah, we've had a good time. We've had a good time with Quest. We've run at least two campaigns with Max as referee using Quest. So we've had a good time with that. And I've had three characters in those across those two campaigns because I did have one fatality under my watch. That's reasonable.
That's good, I was curious how deadly it might be. I got the impression not very, but it's nice to hear that you did have a fatality.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I'm sure it's, you know, how you're right. It's not super. I get specifically hammered with a fatal disease that we couldn't cure is the problem. I was both pissed and I embrace it. I dish it out. I need to be able to take it too. I totally agree. And, it is, you know, statistically, it is actually is a little bit, it is a little bit lightweight for me. I'm not there is part of my hackles that go up that every single role has the same success chance. That's fine. That's the game what it is. And the way that the character classes work, you can recognize them as pretty standard D&D personalities, roles in the party. That's fine. And then, yeah, when you're starting out, and I don't think anybody at our table pre-planned the skill trees that we were going to walk through, which I think is a plus. And when you start out, there's, I think, about 10 initial, depending on the class, they're going to call it a skill or an ability or a spell or a prayer or something like that. So maybe probably about 10 things to pick from, your one ability when you start out, I believe. And then you can add more later as you get more experience. And it worked, you know, it worked fine. I could see what it was. We all understood where we were all the time. We had a good time. It's totally legitimate, I think. You know, for me, it is a pro con about the number of things you have to pick from to begin with. And that's a lot of what we talk about here is, on the one hand, yeah, you have some knobs to choose from at the beginning. But at the other hand, that means that they have to read one page. They have to, having picked the character class, they have to read one page of abilities and choose the one that they prefer to start out with. And in my mind, there's some world in which you'd have fewer to begin with and more later on to choose from. Hmm. But, you know, there is some choice there, and that'll make people happy.
It's okay. So maybe you played it slightly differently, or maybe your memory's just different. But like, maybe. My read of the rules here, it says when you're making a new character, you start with six ability. Choose six to start with.
Okay. There you go.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's a lot of choices to be sitting there making.
Yeah.
Especially because
it is.
I'm assuming choose six means I'm not taking the first ability in every tree, but that's an option. I could be maxing out one of my trees. You're like, I'm going to take all six abilities in this tree. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just looking. So it has been 3 years the last time we played. Two and a half years the last time we played. So good correction on that. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Honestly, I kind of like the idea of it being fewer, right? Because I do want to no. Let's you know, make the characters as quickly as we possibly can. So I like the idea. Honestly, less picking the abilities in the first one. I like the promise of the abilities. right? If I'm imagining this first game, I'm going to play this one shot with people. We're going to play Quest. I like the idea if we're going to sit down, they're going to have a big, big trees of abilities in front of them, but they're only going to pick a handful of them to start with. So it's got this promise of character could get cooler down the road. But also, I like the idea of sitting there and spending time in the silly Mad Lib sheet that talks about what you look like, where you're from, what your personality is. Because I feel like that will be engaging to the group, right? Because people will be talking about, oh, who are you? Where are you going to be from? And maybe we're related, or maybe we're friends, or blah, 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 right? It gets everybody involved very quickly.
Okay, point. Point to that, right? Yes, I agree with that. And it also... gets over the classic problem that I've seen people always stumble with is wanting to, and I'm thinking of our good friend BJ's responses, wanting to surprise the rest of your party, wanting to arrange the moment in a novel or movie where the whole party is in terrible distress, and then one character reveals for the first time, I have this power, and it's a trick that's going to solve the whole problem for us, wanting to arrange that. And those kinds of surprise ability reveals really work incredibly poorly in our role-playing games. You need to have all the information in front of the team so that everybody can put the pieces together. So what you're saying is a really good point, that you're automatically discussing and getting on the table in advance where everybody sits in the party, which specifically solves that ever-present problem. So point to that. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like a strong option to me. Also, of course, I just want to play this game, right? So it fulfills item number one that we started the show with. It's a game the DM is excited to run. Like, yeah, I want to learn it. I want to see how does it play. Like, is it going to be fun or not? I'm curious.
You know, I'll just briefly say one bullet point in the Danifesto is let the person who's excited make the decision.
Yep. That's fair. Yeah,
that's in the book.
Nice.
Okay, let me pitch. We might come back. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to talk about one other major factor. It's just like what content? What do you run? Like what kind of adventure do you play? Do you play a classic dungeon crawl? Do you play something more open ended with more story elements? Right? What do you play?
I mean, I would lean towards a classic dungeon crawl for a number of reasons. Of it specifically has a smaller amount of player choice. I think we've probably all seen cases where we've wanted to present open-ended sandbox worlds and with a number of threads, and that your new players just don't know how to engage with it, just don't know how to make a choice and engage with it. So I think as we've said before, the classic dungeon adventure has a lot of strengths, specifically in reducing the number of choices and reducing the analysis paralysis. So there's some kind of treasure in this dungeon. Here's the one cave. You walk into it, and there's two different doors. And one is blue, and one is red, and one smells funny. It looks like there's light behind, and there's noise behind the other one. So at least to begin with, it focuses the players on the kinds of choices that they can make, and they can make up, you know, other stuff around it, of course. But I do think that the classic dungeon adventure is a really good start of the back and forth information decision making loop, that if that itself is entirely new to people.
I agree. But I think I also want to expose them to the open endedness of the game, of how like anything can happen and you can go anywhere in any direction. Okay. And I'd be tempted to find something. I don't even know if this exists, but I might go hunting for it. Of a game where we could play that begins in a set encounter dungeon-y experience, but maybe something very small, maybe just something that's like 3 to 6 rooms, right? They go through it, they explore, they find their thing. But maybe by the halfway point of our session, they're returning to town. They found the MacGuffin, they have the thing, and then boom, the world opens up to them. Oh, now there's a bazillion complications. What are you going to do?
Interesting.
Here's all these leads, right? Et cetera, et cetera. I think that would be fun, right? I'd love to see in that first session, not just have one session of them crawling through the dungeon the whole time, but like at some point getting to a point where they're going, wait a minute, I have to question the motivations of the people I'm talking to, and what is our plan, and what are our motivations, and why are we here? right, and tackle all that. And I, for me, that's some of the most fun play, right, is when the players get into these big debates and planning sessions and whatnot, and I, as DM, are just kind of leaning back and watching chaos.
Do you think you can get to all that in one session? Like, I feel like a three to six dungeon room for new players, right? I feel like that well might be a whole session, just even with just six rooms
It might be asking for a lot. It might be asking for quite a lot. Maybe I could get there by the end, right? Could I do a whole session where the goal is by the very end, there's a boom wide open. Oh my gosh, everything's crazy. And I thought we had a very straightforward goal, and it turns out it's super complicated. What do we do now? And I go, well, we can do it.
there's a 50-year-old Sesame Street book. There's a 50-year-old Sesame Street cartoon book, and it is very fun. It is very, very warm in my heart. I think it's like Grover in the Museum of Everything. And the promise is that Grover goes into this museum, and this museum contains everything in the whole wide world, I think is the title. Museum of Everything in the Whole Wide World. And so, it's, you know, surreal rooms that can't, you know, physically exist in the world. And there's like stuff that's underwater. There's an underwater room, and you've got a submarine and an octopus and some fish. And Grover comes up from that. And the very tiny things in a room of like enormously huge things, like including like the space shuttle and semi trailer trucks. And he's going through like, well, this is all great, but this isn't everything. I mean, I'm not seeing everything in the whole world. So where is there's going to be more to it. And yes, the last page is the last doors open to the everything else. And it's just the rest of it's outside. It's the rest of the world that you can go
into. It's just outside. It's just the exit.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And he just runs off happily down the trail. Like, oh, there's trees and birds and fish and things, the clouds and the sun. Oh, wonderful. So much more to explore. So I actually am really fond funny. Of constructing a one session dungeon like that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think, William correctly pushed me in the right direction here where he says, you end on that cliffhanger, Paul. Yep. I'm in agreement. All right. Yep, that's where we go.
All right.
Okay.
I think that's good.
I'm sold.
Yeah. All right. The committee came to a decision. The committee came to a conclusion.
No.
We all agree that's the best way to do that.
Now that I will say, though. That is hard to craft, right? Because, of course, as we know, pacing is the hardest part of DMing. And, like, getting them to actually complete the thing and get to that end point where they open the door and go, oh, it's the whole world! Like, yeah. It's hard to do that in a way that feels organic and natural and not just, like, you know, heavy-handed and railroady.
I think that's okay. You know what? I think that's okay. Yeah. You know, to begin with, I think that a lesson that I've been getting from our improv coach here recently is that you need to set the structure of what's happening. You need to set the structure of a scene up front and just accept that the first line is going to be kind of arch and not what a real person would actually say. So you need to come out of the box and you say, I am currently in a castle and I've got a wizard with me and we're being attacked by goblins and I really need to protect the staff of the Holy Scepter, right? And yeah, that, no one's going to really, in the world, everybody around you already has this information. You don't literally need to blab that out, but get the line out the first time, establish the structure, and that helps everybody get on board with it. So I think that for new players, the very first session, the first time, yeah, you're going to be, there's a little bit more rails, a little bit more like directly informing them about what's going to happen. And like in smaller things, I would certainly be like, so at this point you could fight the monster. You could try to talk to it. You could run away or maybe something else that I haven't thought of. Which of those things do you want to do? And when I have brand new players, I definitely give them a menu of options from moment to moment with the like, or none of the above as the last option. Yep. And I do inject that into the process where I normally don't do that with more experienced players. So I don't mind that the first time.
Yeah. That's a good call out. Interesting. You have in your head, okay, let's say, Dan, you have a group of young new players who have only ever watched some Critical Role or some Dimension 20, and they're like, I want to try D&D. I hear Dan's an awesome DM. Let's play. What are you going to run for them?
There is a one-page dungeon from years ago that I'm kind of very simple, but I am kind of fond of it, called The Scepter of Yalacha. And I do have a file folder prepped when if I need to grab it on an impromptu basis, and I grab The Scepter of Yalacha. And it's not even very complicated. It's, at least to begin with, it's a little railroady. And I will say that there is a twist at the end. Ironically, kind of like what we're talking about, whereby, it starts off like the very room number one, fatal poison centipedes. So I get to, like, right off the box, I get to, like, first room, I go, just to be clear, you recognize these giant centipedes, and they're dripping fatal poison, and a single bite would immediately eliminate your character. Let's go, roll for initiative. Let's see what happens here. So I get to do that, and then there's some up-down play, and then there's some undead at the bottom, and then there's a twist. And so as the players get to find out, near the end, that not all is what it seems in the world of D&D, and you might need to watch out for your back in ways that you didn't expect to begin with. In a tiny little nutshell, it did kind of attract me, that particular one-page dungeon. So I actually have done that maybe at least twice.
That's fantastic. Where have you run that?
Yeah. for a new player, well, you're not a new player, Paul. You're not a new player, so I would not run it for you. I run it when, here, like probably in New York, a couple times when people are in this situation. I've heard about D&D. I've never played it before. Or, some part of my extended friend network, gets three or four people in that situation. So I have done that at least two or three times here. Two, I will say I am set up with completely improvised dungeon design stuff. So I have practiced a couple times if I had to, and there's some random rolls, and I have like six of Dyson Logos's dungeons. I roll a D6 to figure out which of the dungeons I'm running currently, roll a random, two random monsters and a random treasure. And I can do that in like about 40 minutes. I do that. And then many people will also highly approve of the... Somebody wrote an introductory module a while back called like the something Snake People Lair. I think one of our viewers is going to remind me something Snake People Lair specifically as a kind of tutorial for what OSR play is like. So nice. Just a couple of things I have that I would grab, and I would be in fact using original D&D.
I've looked it up here. It's Scepter of Yalacha by David Dudka. Yep. There you go. Very nice. It's easy to find on the internet. I found that. I also have a one-page dungeon that's a favorite go-to, but I've never thought about whether or not I should use it for newbies, but I think maybe that might be interesting. Called Citadel of the Severed Hand by Rob S.
Right.
I don't know if he's got a last name, but that's how he's credited on the page. But similarly, I think has... it's just a fascinating dungeon crawl-ish thing, but like the idea being you're invading this orc lair while the orcs are away. They're the major force of the orcs have left. You're going to go infiltrate their fortress while they're gone. There might be a few orcs here, but it should be easy to go raid the place. And then, of course, you find out the thing that's motivating their raids, and it's, maybe not the great.
Oh, that's a great premise. I love that.
Yeah. It's a fun one. I like it.
It's it's very small, it's very self-contained, it's usable, I think, for one session. And you get the whole arc. You get the whole beginning, ending, conclusion, so you get the whole sequence. And certainly with classic adventures, I learned that there's always a struggle. You can't play the classic TSR publications in a 4-hour session. So, wanting to see the whole beginning, middle, ending arc in that first introductory session, I think that one's pretty good. And the other one that I was thinking of, I think practically all of our viewers knew that it was Tomb of the Serpent King. So thank you guys for reminding me about that. Tomb of the Serpent King. Great, great introductory adventure. A little bit longer. I think that might not be a single session. That might be two or three sessions possibly.
Yeah. yeah, we're definitely narrowing in here on a very specific desire for like a one shot, right? Something I'm going to run in one single session. Probably need to have like at most 4 hours of play, probably less.
Right.
What can I race through?
Right.
Fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
You know, one thing. Okay.
Go on. I think my question was going to be, is this content runnable in Quest? Can I adapt old school classic D&D games to run in Quest? Do you think it would work?
I mean, only if you're a really top level DM, Paul, which you are. So the answer is yes. And probably all of our viewers too. All of our viewers too are among the most experienced, smart, wise game runners. They know what they're doing. So I would say not for everybody, but for our viewers, you guys are so smart. Yes, you can totally do that. You know you can do that.
It seems like an interesting... I'm curious to check it out. Anyway, go on. What was your thought?
Okay.
I interrupted.
Let me throw out Steve K's other... So many great comments today, actually. Steve K's other thought, which is legitimate. Shouldn't everyone's first module be B2, The Keep on the Borderlands, by Gary Gygax? That's a solid argument, actually. And you know, many of our friends are, you know, our friend Max has done exactly that with new players and actually had really great experiences. I have had, you know, there is the possibility that you get bogged down in the Keep area. So we've definitely seen new players not understand that they need to set up a base in the Keep and then go explore for the caves areas,
you know.
So,
Here's one of the interesting points that we didn't really dig at in this episode, right? Because I think that our friend BJ would say, no, you should start in B1, Quasqueton. Not Quasqueton, whatever the real title of that one is. Right? And me personally, I would say, no, you should start in L1, you know, Len Lakofka's... I'm not even going to remember the actual title of it. Something Hill of Bones, something about Bones.
The actual title. Secret of Bone Hill. I believe.
Secret of Bone Hill. Right. My brain always immediately jumps to the town name, which is Restonford.
That's ridiculous because the first thing you should start in is J. Eric Holmes' Dungeon of Xenopus. That's the one that you really got to start with. I mean, come on.
Okay. How much of this is being fired by nostalgia? That's what I want to know. How much of this is just the nostalgia of the person running the thing, right? And that's, I think, one of the most interesting angles of this whole problem is that I have to completely throw out the nostalgia factor because none of these people I'm running for know any of this stuff. They have no idea what I'm talking about, right?
I'm personally encouraged that I fell in love with original D&D at a very late date. I did not have the original D&D white box rules when I was growing up. I was just slightly too old for that. I did have the Eric Holmes basic set, and I had the advanced D&D books by Gary Gygax. But at least on a rules level, I didn't actually get my hands on original D&D until 30 years later. And when I got it, I was like, this is the best edition. I like this better than what I grew up with, actually. So... with me, you know, at least with that particular experience of the things that I adore are not necessarily the things that I had when I first came to the game. And I have, you know, great affection for it, but I've you know, moved to an earlier edition that I didn't have access to. And my, you know, my assessment in Dan's brain is that I like this system better. For all these reasons of being brief and snappy and easy to handle and easy to modify when you want to and DM mastery and all these kinds of things just seems so much more freeing. So at least with that particular data point, you know, the things that I'm throwing at new players are not necessarily the things that I had because they might be older than what I had. So I don't think it's nostalgia that's driving that.
That's fair, right? And there's an argument, right, that we are nostalgic for these things. They are considered classics for a reason, right? They have certain qualities about them that make them very appealing and long lasting, right? So that's worth calling that out. Dan, we are out of time.
Is an essence and there's damn it. Let me make one brief additional pitch is that might be in people's minds nowadays is that you don't, if you're playing classic editions, you don't need a subscription. You don't need to use a website. You don't need to use a web platform. And that's very much on some people's minds nowadays. The current, you know, you're not engaging with a big business. The people that engage with older school games now or OSR type stuff, they're indie, they're scrappy, they're not a big business. You don't have to turn over either dollars or personal information to a big business to engage with these older indie games. That itself might be a plus to some people that are you know, concerned about big platforms taking everybody's experience and profiting off it. So that's a thing that I'm a little bit happy about, that, you know, this is an indie type affair that we're engaged with now. And that might be a plus too.
That's fair. Viewers, if you have thoughts on the best way to introduce old school or classic D&D to the new generation now in 2025, 50 years after publication, how do we make this game appear like the exciting, living, breathing game that it is, rather than a dusty old relic from a time gone past? Leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. Also, I'd love to hear if you have thoughts about like that perfect first adventure to run. What is the hook that you think you can play in 3 to 4 hours with a new group that's going to make them beg for more? Let us know.
Yes, and I love that, and I also love the consensus we came to of run a one-shot with pre-generated characters, get into it fast, and then have the conversation about where do we want to take it from here? Bigger, smaller, funnier, more serious, horror, something like that? That seems like a great observation. If people agree with that or disagree with that, those would be great comments. Of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us, Wandering DMs. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and TikTok and Loops and GitHub and Instagram. And we do have the handle Wandering DMs on all of those sites. So please look for us there and blaze up that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available at our website at wanderingdms.com. Also through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to us right now on one of those sites and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really, really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And every single tier gets you access to our private Discord server where we're just the best patrons with the best ideas and the best thoughts. Paul, we have had some just really great conversations on our Discord server with people doing an analysis and thoughts of design of old school dungeons like we were talking about. The best ways to set them up, possible formats of structuring dungeons lately. And there's just like a really great brain trust there, thinking about all these kinds of things all the time. So if you're not a patron, we would love to see you on our Discord server and participating in those just awesome conversations we have all the time. In addition, like Paul said at the top of the hour, we will be there in about 10 minutes to continue the discussion with our live video after chat, where we get you to tell us immediately the things that we overlooked or we missed in the chat or something like that we need to know about before our Sunday is over. So please join us there on our Discord for our live video after chat about 10 minutes after the hour here. Don't forget that we will be going to GaryCon 18, the start of the year. So we're making our plans on our end, and you can start making plans on your end. Now, we're normally on every Sunday. Next week, Paul, I am sad to say I'm going to be wandering, so I myself won't be available next Sunday, so we will be off on October 12th, but we will be back 1 week after that, so we'll be back in 2 weeks on October 19th here. I think that's the plan, yes. Now, again, we have some great guests on the schedule coming up, so look for it. Be sure to tune in. I got to check the schedule, see if that's one of our guest episodes. Maybe yes, but we have really great guests coming up. So we do hope you'll join in on future Sundays for that. Am I forgetting anything I have to tell people?
I think you got everything there. Well done.
Sweet. Nailed it.
Yeah.
So viewers, don't forget that we're live almost every Sunday, 2 weeks from now at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us in 2 weeks for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.